This is Will's Band of the Week for January 4th, 2015. Hello and welcome to another edition of Will's Band of the Week. This is Will, along with live
Nicholas Perch,
live from Perth, Australia, Melbourne correspondent Nicholas. That is so cool.
Yeah, it's me, Nicholas. Hello.
Yeah, and so not only are you the Melbourne correspondent, but now you're reporting in from Perth, right?
Woo. It's true. I'm on the other side of the continent. I'm on the west coast, Perth in Australia. Yeah, where it's beautiful, beautiful and sunny.
Wow.
And at 6 a.m. in the morning, I'm sitting in a car doing this podcast.
That shows dedication.
Sitting in a parked car.
He's in a car at 6 in the morning, but he does have coffee.
Yep, got my coffee.
And
so I'm ready to roll.
And here I am in gloomy, cold, cloudy Wisconsin at 4 in the afternoon. Yeah, it's about 40 degrees, but it's going to go down. The high in 2 days is going to be like less than 20 degrees. So, yeah, well, that's how it is on this side of the hemisphere. That's not the right way to say it, right? That's how it is in the northern hemisphere at this time of year.
Yeah, we're getting our hemispheres and our whatever our other spheres. We're just in a big sphere connected by the internet, and that's all that matters.
Yeah, it's kind of cool though because you're literally like halfway across the world from me, right?
Yeah.
I don't know.
We're having this telephone conversation. We haven't even seen each other. I kind of know what your face looks like, but yeah. We're just sitting here, two guys talking to each other. It's quite cool.
Yeah, it's very cool. You know, there's this thing when you grow up in the United States, it's the, I have no idea how much this is based in fact, but this the idea that if you dug a hole straight down, that you'd end up in China. I'm not even sure if that's right. But
that's because that's what happens in all the cartoons, which is obviously based on reality.
Yeah. So I'm not really sure. Maybe we did this exercise when you had you on before, but I was like pointing down to my floor and saying that's where you are.
actually, I am. I'm under your floorboards now. I'm just going to knock.
Yeah.
Can you hear me? Will, let me in. Cut through your floorboards.
The sound isn't quite carrying that far. There's probably, there's like a, 1 billion-billionth of a, something of vibration that, theoretically could be measured from here when you do that?
Yeah, it's like it's like the butterfly in the Amazon rainforest that causes the tsunami in Madison, Wisconsin. It'll probably cause a little ripple on your coffee cup. In Madison, right. Wisconsin, if I clap my hands, I don't know. I think it's too early in the morning. I'm just like not making sense already, Will, and we haven't even started the first song.
Yeah, well, you haven't had a chance to wake up yet. I mean, hopefully the coffee's helping. The music will really get you going, though. But so you said it's beautiful. Like, what is the typical high temperature in Perth this time of year?
Well, see, we're in Celsius. You're in Fahrenheit, so. Over here, it's about 30 degrees Celsius. I haven't got a conversion thing in front of me. I think that's like, it's hot, like 30 degrees Celsius, and it can get up to 40 degrees Celsius. Any good conversions, Will? I'm sure like 100 degrees Fahrenheit. I think that's about 25 or 30 degrees Celsius. Does that sound about right?
I just looked it up. 30 Celsius is 86 Fahrenheit.
Okay.
So that'd be like a warm summer day here, but not really uncomfortably hot, but
no, but
solid
like you're in shorts, shorts and a t-shirt all the time.
Yeah, boy, that is nice.
I've got sandals on, so it's not it cools down at night a little bit, but yeah.
How cold is Melbourne in the winter? Does it get to like below freezing a lot?
It doesn't get to below freezing, so I guess it's all relative. We don't have the extreme winters like you do in America, where we have, like, you know, piles of snow everywhere. There are mountains where you can go skiing, where it obviously snows, and occasionally it'll snow. Kind of Melbourne's a coastal town, so it's at sea level. But it'll get to, you know, 0 degrees again Celsius. You'll have to go back to your conversion. So 0 degrees Celsius, it doesn't get a lot. It doesn't really get much below that. Maybe one or two, a minus one or two overnight if it's really, really cold. But to us, it's like, oh my God, it's so cold. But I know that your temperatures over there are more extreme than that in the wintertime.
Right. Well, 0 Celsius is the freezing point of water, right? So that's 32 Fahrenheit. So, yeah, that would be, like, most winter days, the high is lower than that. So, around here. So, yeah. And we hit, you know, we hit below zero. So, below zero for us. Okay, we're going to do one more temperature conversion here. So, let's see what would 0 Fahrenheit be. Okay, that would be 18 degrees below 0 Celsius. Usually hits that a few times every year around
18.
Here.
18? Oh, my God.
It'd be 18 below for you. Yeah. Yep. So, all right. So, the whole theme here is that I'm a little jealous that you have this great weather, and we're just kind of starting our dreary winter. So, we need to have some good music to, you know, keep us going through the winter.
I'll try to somehow transmit all this beautiful weather that's around me. I'll transmit it down my phone wires and, you know, across the internet.
I can feel it already. I think we've got a good start.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Not only did you do a top nine of 2014, but you've got a bonus feature for the listeners.
I do.
Right?
Yeah, I thought it'd be good because I was originally when you asked me to do this, I thought, I'm going to kind of struggle to get, you know, like about 10 tracks that are actually from this year. But I guess I kind of did a little bit differently, and we will be visiting some years outside of 2014. Mm-hmm. But yeah, we thought we'd start off with, I guess, looking at a couple of people who passed away. So I know that the death of the week is a feature on your podcast. So kind of made me think back on, I picked out a couple of people who I guess mean something to me, you know, whose music I have a personal connection with. I suppose that's the thing. Obviously, there's lots of amazing musicians who unfortunately pass away every year. But these there was two people who I had a bit of a soft spot for musically. So the first person who passed away, who I thought, oh, geez, that's a real shame, is blues guitarist Johnny Winter, who died in July this year, or 2014. I'm not sure when this podcast is going to be put out. If you don't know Johnny Winter, he became a big, sort of massive star in the 70s. He had an amazing look. So he was a white guy with straight, like really white blonde hair, played a Gibson Firebird, and was an awesome guitar player, and he died at the age of 70. He kept on releasing albums and performing. He even performed at a French blues festival just 2 days before he died. But my connection with him was that he collaborated with Muddy Waters, and in the mid 70s, kind of was responsible for sort of reviving Muddy Waters' career to an extent. So he played guitar with Muddy Waters, but he also produced two or three of his great albums from the mid 70s, and the first one that he did was this awesome album called Heart Again. And so when I was 13 years old, my older brother William started getting into blues, and he bought this record, Heart Again by Muddy Waters, and he put it on. And it was kind of my first exposure to blues music, really, which I love. And so this track that we're going to hear is a song called Manish Boy, which is like the opening track of this album. And it's just an awesome sort of opening to an album. You can hear how excited they are in the studio. It's totally electric. It just kind of blew my mind as to how cool and how rockin' blues music could be. And I think that Johnny Winter, being the producer, this album was really responsible for that. He also plays guitar. And so let's hear it. Manish Boy from Heart Again by Muddy Waters back in 1977.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. everything gonna be all right this morning. Oh, yeah. Young boy, at the age of five, my mother's child gonna be the greatest man alive. But now I'm a man, way past 21. I want you to believe me, baby. I have lots of fun. I'm a man.
Muddy Waters with the assistance of Johnny Winter.
Yeah, rest in peace, Johnny Winter.
So he was Edgar Winter's brother, right? Were they twins?
I don't know. Not sure.
And I can't remember if Edgar Winter is still alive.
Yeah, I don't know. But you're right. Yeah, they were brothers. Mm. So there you go. Maybe our indie rock fans that listen to the show just been maybe introduced to the blues via Johnny Winter and Muddy Waters.
Yep, that's the classic blues sound for sure. So would you say that like electrified it a little bit more? Like where was that taking the the blues riffs and sound from before then?
I'm not as much of a blues aficionado as I probably should be. But I think it's not like they were the first electric blues kind of albums, but mm-hmm. And I think in a way they were trying to get back to a kind of a sound that Muddy Waters had maybe 10 years before that. And people like the Rolling Stones are always kind of said that they are, you know, right into Muddy Waters, you know, from the 60s and that sort of thing. But yeah, I just really liked it because it is very electric. They got electric guitars and it just had this kind of like warm kind of distortion kind of sound. Johnny Winter was obviously an electric guitar player and, you know, a lot of his music was like kind of like faster. I think it all just kind of worked when they did it together.
All right. Death of the Year, number one, Johnny Winter.
Yeah, yeah.
And you've got one more.
Yeah, another one. So another producer, I guess we're talking about Johnny Winter producing Muddy Waters then. And another producer passed away who was Mark Bell, who I knew because he produced many of Bjork's albums starting from the mid-90s. I think you actually say Bjork, but in Australia we tend to say Bjork anyway. He produced, I think he started maybe with either Post or Homogenic. I know that the Homogenic album was from 97. I suppose the thing that I always liked about Bjork's albums was, you know, she's obviously an amazing singer and her lyrics are really interesting. But, you know, the music and the production that always went along with her albums I just thought was a really great balance to her voice. And I believe that Mark Bell was really responsible for a lot of that. If you kind of read the liner notes, he often like programmed the electronic beats and basically just produced all this incredible electronic music that went under Bjork's voice on her albums, and particularly the Homogenic album I loved. And unfortunately he died in October. He was only 43. Apparently it said from what I read that he had some sort of complications following surgery, which sounds terrible, like he went in to get his appendix out and never woke up or something like that. I've no idea. But yeah, look, he wasn't old, and did all this incredible production on Bjork's albums, and just thought it'd be good to just pay tribute to him. I chose a track called Immature from the Homogenic album of 97.
That's Immature, and it's actually labeled Mark Bell's version. So
yeah. So I don't know if it's, you know, if it's you know, we're talking about producers a lot, and you know, people pushing the button. So maybe you're kind of like the producer here, aren't you, Will? And I'm sort of like Bjork. I'm sort of doing the vocals over the top, and you're sort of pushing the buttons, making it sound amazing, isn't it?
Right.
So it's all connected.
It is. You're the star vocalist, and I'm turning the knobs in the background. And I won't get sufficient credit for how great I make you sound.
No, it'll just be me. They'll be like, oh, man, that Nicholas is awesome.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, that's it's fun listening to an older recording and when it sounds so good. And then you think, wow, you know, they were making good recordings a long time ago.
That's almost 20 years ago.
That Johnny Winter Muddy Waters thing, that was super punchy, good sound.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's only so much you can do to, you know, to improve sound, because it's just, you know, it's easier to make good sounding recordings in a way now, just because of the technology. But it's not necessarily easier to, you know, be good at it and have an ear for it. So I almost have more appreciation for the producers, you know, back then than I do now.
Yeah, working with less technology and that sort of thing.
Yeah, and sometimes, I don't know, sometimes now producers try to make it just like they put out albums and they're just a producer and they're kind of only a producer, and they're not, you know, I think you need both, right? You need the producer and you need the talent. So you got Bjork there, and you got Muddy Waters, you got people who can justify the production. And I don't know, I'm always reading these reviews on Pitchfork. They're always just some producer puts out an album. It just never seems to be that interesting if it's only a producer. It's almost like the guy made his name producing somebody, you know, who's a real big talent, and now since he's got the equipment, he gets to put out an album. You know, it might not be that great.
Yeah, it's because the producer's stuck behind the mixing board the whole time, going, "I could do better than this."
Exactly,
guy.
Right.
Let me hear on my own. I'll do it myself.
Right. Yeah. How many albums just by a producer have you really thought, "Wow, this is a great album"? I don't know. I think I'm still waiting for one. So. All right, well, those are good. So that leads us up to your top 9 albums.
Top 9. Yeah. And I guess I was kind of thinking, as I was putting this together, it is kind of, well, I'm kind of going to say it's all a little bit silly, really, isn't it? It's not like, it's like making music into some sort of competition. And it's obviously not really competition. And I think for me, the way that I listen to music, I just try to find music that sort of fits my mood. And it's just like, what am I in the mood for? And then I'll put on that album and just love that. So these kind of these tracks are really just stuff that I was in the mood for this year, it's almost like I've made a it's like making a compilation tape, you know, for your friend to send overseas. These are like you know, things that I was listening to, so you know, you could think of it as that. But I have put it in an order of, I guess, stuff that I liked more than others. So as we get towards number one, it's kind of like stuff that I probably tended to put on more and more. And that's a good indication, is it really isn't. What did I actually listen to that I really liked? So
right.
So let's get into it. So we're talking about producers and how much you hate albums by just by producers. So number nine is an album just by a producer. Yeah.
All right. Way to go. That's timely.
And look, this is a good example of an album that you guys turned me on to. So months and months ago, you reviewed the album by, I believe you pronounce it, Todd Terrier. Terrier. He's a French producer. In Australia, we say Todd Terge. You really have to talk through your nose when you're an Australian. So you'd say Todd Terge.
Yeah.
Terge on. Well, Terge.
It's spelled like Terge, but yeah, it's probably, probably
T-E-R-J-E.
Yep.
So if you know what you're talking about, you'll say Terrier, but I don't know what I'm talking about, so I'm going to say Todd Terge.
Yeah.
He did an album called It's Album Time, and I just found this quite fun to listen to. Often when I was at work, I would put it on because it was kind of just a kind of a fun, you know, it's kind of got a bit of an 80s kind of vibe, you know, don't take it too seriously. I think it actually sounds good when you're kind of like doing stuff, when you're trying to like get a bit of energy up. And it was quite fun to listen to. So I picked track one, which was just called Intro, It's Album Time. Let's hear it, Todd Terge.
Album time. Yeah. You know, I have a memory of this, and it's funny that you came up with this right after I complained about producers. But I remember this from when I took two of my sons to New York City over spring break, and we had never been to New York City before. So we were the, we kind of joked, we're the small town people staring up at the big buildings. Mm-hmm. Sort of an exaggeration, but we went to Rough Trade Records in Brooklyn, and this was one of the albums that was on the, you know, the featured new releases, and it's got kind of cool artwork. So I had like an affiliation with that, which is kind of fun. So yeah, that is a good one. It's definitely a fun album. It's, you got to have fun albums where you don't have to like be too serious about them, right?
Yeah, that's right. Absolutely.
Okay.
So should we keep on going up the ladder?
Let's do it. Number eight.
All right, so we're at number eight. So this is under the title of Wacky Retro Releases That Barrett Found. And I think he was in a record store sometime. Is that right? And he saw this on the wall and he was like, hey, what's that?
I think so, yeah. That was the story. Yep.
So we're calling her Zelda, even though you spell her name S-E-L-D-A. And this is her self-titled album from the mid-70s. And she's from Turkey, and I looked her up, and she is like a Turkish folk singer, but she did some, particularly this album, she kind of like, you know, put together her sort of Turkish folk singing with this awesome 70s psychedelic rock, and came up with this incredible album. And I love fuzz guitar. And I even just like the word fuzz, F-U-double-Z. So when you put that together with guitar, fuzz guitar, it's like, how could there be anything better in the world? So she's got, there's all this great 70s fuzz guitar on this, you know, teamed up with her crazy, crazy Turkish singing. And it's kind of weird, you know, you're kind of listening to it and I'm sort of thinking, is this terrible or is this great? But somehow I always came back to it, and it was, again, just kind of like, it was great to listen to when you're working or you're doing something else and you've got these crazy sounds spinning around you. And yeah, listen to the fuzz guitar. This is track 11 that I've picked out. I'm going to try to say the title, Niye Katin Kesalarini. That's completely incorrect, but I'm not Turkish.
Zelda.
Yeah, Zelda. And look, that's a good example of me crapping on about something, and then when you listen to it, it's like, oh, that's not really what Nicholas said, was it? Because you notice that there was no fuzz guitar in that track at all, which is, you know, slightly embarrassing. There's plenty of fuzz guitar in other tracks.
And I remember thinking some of it sounded like Led Zeppelin, like in a fun way. Like,
Yeah. So, you know, and it is, I did find it difficult to pick one track from some of these albums, because, you know, I usually listen to things, you know, more than one track.
Right.
But then when you got to just pick one that sort of represents the album and one that's maybe like the first, you know, minute and a half are really good, it's quite tricky. So, I mean, that's kind of a good example. You know, that Zelda album has got lots of different sounds. I promise you there's lots of fuzz guitar on other tracks. How many of your listeners do you think I've sort of alienated already by starting off with a 70s blues track and now some sort of weird Turkish thing from the 70s? There are all these indie rock fans that are like, what the hell is this? Stop.
I think they're going to stick with you. I think they're going to be still intrigued. See, we're still basically right. Early. Yeah.
Yeah, we
don't worry, listeners.
There's plenty of indie rock coming up.
Yeah, it's going to get more and more interesting as it goes on. Not that it hasn't been already. So, all right, what's number 8?
Actually, we're up to that was number 8.
Oh, you're right, because we started with number 9. That threw me off. Yeah, we're up to number 7.
Yes. So number 7 is Melbourne artist Plastic Knife. Now, look, full disclosure is that Plastic Knife is actually one guy. It's a friend of mine, Luke. So, yes, already, you know, I've only done 2 podcasts already. I'm abusing my power. But this is actually an extraordinary album. So as Plastic Knife, This guy is, he produces a lot of, he's an incredibly prolific artist, and he's in lots of bands, but also does a lot of zines, produces zines that are published all over the world. And so this album came out as a CD that was part of a zine, and so it's Plastic Knife number 11. And the story behind the recording I thought was amazing, because Luke would basically sit down at his kitchen table with his acoustic guitar, and he had a little digital video camera, and he would just switch the microphone on, so he wasn't making a video clip of himself. He was just recording the audio just with a camera, and he'd push record, and he'd basically just record these kind of spontaneous songs. So, like, he'd just, like, start off with a couple of chords on his guitar and then do some vocals and then hit stop, and then that was the song. And so he made this whole album of these sort of spontaneously recorded songs sitting at his kitchen table, and he didn't even wait till everything was quiet. So throughout the whole album, you can hear, like, the television's on or his kids are running around. And I just thought it was an amazing way to make a record. You know, we're always sort of searching for these quiet places and try to make our home recording sound as professional as possible. And Luke kind of did the opposite. And I thought it was just a great way to make music. So, let's hear it. Plastic Knife from the album number 11. And this is a track that's got these beautiful guitar chords in it. That's why I chose this one. This track is called 100,000 Dead Birds.
Plastic Knife, number 11. That's great. I'm glad you added a little local flavor to this. There aren't too many people in the United States who have heard Plastic Knife, I would imagine.
Yeah, well, you know, that album's on Bandcamp, and, I know that Beck did, kind of some lo-fi acoustic-y kind of stuff back in the 90s, and I know that idea of spontaneous songs, it's almost a bit sort of... Yeah, I like the way Neil Young comes up with some songs, and I don't know, it's really cool, and check it out, Plastic Knife.
Yep, great. All right, are we up
to
number
six?
Yeah.
We're up to number six. So this is my kind of, I'm a hipster, I'm into the really cool music. This is my little nod to, trying to be that. Number six is The War on Drugs. And I always get this band mixed up with TV on the Radio. So they're both two bands that I know nothing about, and I just kind of hear their names being mentioned.
Yeah.
So it's
maybe
bands with the name with the word "on" in them. So this is War on Drugs. It's not TV on the Radio. So The War on Drugs. But this album, I know that I'm pretty sure it was probably in lots of people's top tens because critically acclaimed and all that.
Yes.
But the album Lost in a Dream, I thought it was a great album. and totally reminded me. No, I'm not the first in saying it. Sort of sounded like Bruce Springsteen. Reminded me of Born in the USA, and I think for me, mostly because of the drumming. For some reason, it's got a sort of the way that the drums sound. I like the Born in the USA drum sound, you know, from 84 or whatever it is. So it's kind of weird that these sort of 80s sounds are coming back in a kind of a cool way, or what people consider cool. But this track that I picked is track 3, Suffering. And Will, I know I'm not sort of springing this on you, but it's a long track, and at 3 minutes 20, the guitar solo starts, and it's, for me, it's an example. I play guitar, so I love listening to people's guitar sounds, and this is an example of like the perfect guitar. He's obviously got it running through all these guitar effect pedals, and he's just got the perfect guitar effect pedal sound, and the way the, particularly the opening sort of notes of this guitar solo when it comes in at 3 minutes 20 is just like, oh yeah, that is awesome, and totally makes this song just a beautiful musical moment from the War on Drugs. So maybe if you can just roll it back a little bit from 3 minutes 20, we can all bathe in the glory of the guitar effect pedals.
All right, let's fade it in around 2 minutes or so then. Sound okay. Good? All right, here we go. War on Drugs. Yeah, you know, one thing that I really liked about this album, in addition to the great guitar and the production kind of goes without saying, it's like you can tell they worked on it really hard. But I also like the piano. You know, I think that piano can be, I don't really like very many rock bands that are like have too predominant of piano in their sound. But I think when it's tastefully used, it can be, it's an underrated thing you can have in your arsenal, little piano.
Yeah.
Which this album has some.
It's not used that much, really. Sorry, go on.
It has some very good piano in it, this album.
Yeah.
So, yep.
Yeah, it's nice. It kind of feels like you just dive, particularly when that guitar comes in. It's like diving into a beautiful pool of water or something like that, isn't it?
Right,
You just want to like roll around in the sound.
Right, totally. Sweet. Yep. That's good. I'm glad you picked that one. Mm-hmm. Clearly we missed some, so we needed you to fill them in for us. Yep. All right. I think we're cool. Up to the top five now.
Top five, yeah. And look, there's at least a couple there. Well, there's a couple in here that I know were in your top fives as well. So I'm not bringing out any surprises, but again, just things that I really liked. So number five was Sun Kill Moon. from his album Benji. So I kind of know Sun Kil Moon because it's basically one guy. There's all these bands, as we know, who are basically just one guy, Mark Kozelek, who used to be known as Red House Painters,
right?
And that was kind of a band, and then it just ended up being just him again anyway. But I really got into the Red House Painters in the sort of mid-90s and followed him a little bit from there. And when you were talking about New York City, I was actually in New York City probably about 11 or 12 years ago, and happened to be there when, he was actually known as Sun Kil Moon then. He was doing a little club show. So I was like, oh, yeah, this is totally awesome. I can't believe it. I'm going to get to see Mark Kozelek play. So I rocked up at this bar, got there early, of course, because I wanted to get a good position, and walked in. And, there's this guy kind of sitting in a chair in this white shirt and kind of like looked up at me because there was no one else around. He's like, hey. I'm like, hi. And, of course, that's him. That's Mark Kozelek right there. I didn't even really know what he looked like because he's never got any pictures of himself on his albums. I just sort of knew his name.
Mm-hmm.
And he did this gig. And, oh, man, the people that went to his gig, and again, this is 10 years ago, are like disciples. They just like adore him and just think he's this kind of like genius, which, I'm a great songwriter. And so they would be calling out for all these obscure songs, and he was playing tracks from songs, and he couldn't like remember the first line of the second verse. And he was like, hey, what's the line of the next verse? And he'd just go into another song. And then I did sort of talk to him a little bit after the show, and he was such a humble guy and actually quite self-deprecating. Like in the middle of the gig, he was sort of talking about how he had guys from his record company there at the gig. So he had to, that was kind of reminding him that he had to kind of like, tell everybody to go out and buy the album or, go to the merch table and buy a T-shirt. But he was, remember him calling himself, he was sort of saying, oh, I'm such a loser that I, I'm really terrible at, promoting my own product. And I just thought that was so interesting that he kind of called himself a loser. But obviously, he's this incredible talent, and I guess that just gave me a tiny little insight as to his kind of personality. And it kind of comes across in his music a little bit, doesn't it? He's very kind of like, it's kind of a bit downbeat, isn't it? A lot of his music, a bit like Leonard Cohen, I suppose. Not that it's necessarily depressing, but you can hear that's maybe in his personality a little bit, doesn't it? Am I making sense?
Oh yeah, yeah. And we talked about this before. That seems at times like that it's so personal that you couldn't even make it up because it's just too real. And yeah. So even though some of the stories are kind of all these stories of death are kind of like it's hard to believe they're real, but then you sort of believe they are. Right?
Yeah, yeah. And anyway, I remember hearing this track that I've picked. Ben's my friend. Someone was playing it on the radio here in Melbourne. And it's hilarious. His music's got such an amazing sense of humor. And yes, some of it's sort of ironic, but, I just love these lyrics. And they're just telling this story. And, this bit where he's kind of like sitting with his girlfriend at some sports bar and his girlfriend's asking him, oh, what's going on? And he's saying, oh, it's just some middle-aged thing. And then he just sits there looking at all the sports bar shit on the wall. Like, it's just... it's so funny. It's just like he's talking to you through these songs. And yeah, that's so hard to do as a songwriter to feel like you're just talking through your songs, man. It's amazing. And he seems to do it so kind of effortlessly.
Yep.
Anyway, I just think he's great. So this is Sun Kil Moon from the album Benji, my number five. This track is called Ben's My Friend.
Woke up this morning, August 3rd. It's been a pretty slow and uneventful summer. Went to visit a friend in Santa Fe. Went to New Orleans and went to see my family. Woke up this morning and it occurred I needed one more track to finish up the record. I was feeling out of fuel and uninspired. Laid in my bed too long, a little down, a little tired. Met my girl and we walked down Union Street. I was scattered and my head was in a bunch of places. Bought a $350 pair of lampshades and we ate at Perry's and I ordered crab cakes. Blue crab cakes. little crab cakes, little crab cakes. She said, I seem distracted, and that's what was going on with me. I said, I can't explain it, it's a middle-aged thing. She said, okay, and ate her eggs Benedict. And I looked at the walls cluttered with sports bar shit. Sports bar shit. Sports bar shit. Sports bar shit.
Sunkill Moon. Yeah, did you follow that whole controversy? It's funny that you picked The War on Drugs and Sunkill Moon consecutively, because there was that big feud. Did you ever read about that?
No.
Oh,
what was that?
Well, this would be like the goofy media controversy of the year. There's this big thing, and I couldn't even tell whether the whole thing was just kind of concocted to give them both publicity or not, but it seems to have started with Mark Kozelek saying to a crowd live about how he thinks the War on Drugs is just terrible. And then he kept putting out these public comments that the War on Drugs totally sucks, you know, just like, and he was just taunting them to the point where they finally had to respond. And then he wrote this song about the War on Drugs. It's like, you have to go look it up. I'm not going to try to repeat it.
I
won't do it justice, but it's kind of funny. And I'm left still wondering whether he really hates those guys or whether either somehow they struck a nerve with him where he thinks like that this is like that the War on Drugs is just bad music and he really honestly hates it, or if he's just kind of yanking their chain, you know. I can't really even tell. But anyway, yeah, that was a funny thing.
Yeah, I think he has got a bit of that kind of attitude. When we were listening to that bit of War on Drugs, it was funny coming into halfway through the track, because you could sort of listen to that track and sort of think, it kind of sounds like, you know, Bryan Adams from 1992 or something like that.
Yeah, well, that's another one where you kind of have to listen to the whole album. That's a long album, too. Yeah, and
so I can see why he would, you know, think that they suck, sure.
And the Sunkill Moon album, I think I mentioned this before, but it's just one of those where if I really had taken the time, I think I would have appreciated it a lot more. But you kind of have to take the time, right? You have to make that investment that you're going to really listen to it. It's not really background music.
No, and even I mean, I even took the time. I even listened to it many times, loved it. But then in the last few days when I was choosing a track, I was trying to find particular tracks with particular lyrics that I remembered. So I was listening to it a little bit closer and still discovering like cool things about it. So yeah, I think it's kind of easy to just to listen to a little bit and think, oh, yeah, it's just some kind of like, you know, mopey kind of like folky kind of thing. Yeah, it's not really my thing. But I think there's actually a lot more depth in there than maybe meets the ear initially.
Yeah, I think that's true. Okay, we're up to number four.
Number four, another Will's Band of the Week, you know, favorite. And probably another good example of after listening to your podcast for the last couple of years, you know, there's obviously bands that you guys mention. So if I happen to – a lot of the music – sometimes we've got a local library that has a really great CD collection, and they're always adding new CDs. So often I go there just to borrow CDs of things that I don't have.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously at some point I picked up the Real Estate album thinking, oh, yeah, you know, Will's Band of the Week are always talking about Real Estate. I'll give this one a try. And, yeah, look, I just really liked it. Their band, their album Atlas, again, an example of an album that I just listened to a lot, which to me just kind of like indicates that I really liked it, you know? And I was even listening to it this morning when I was making some coffee at about 5:30. And I think it's kind of like, it kind of like creeps in, this music. You can listen to it very sort of like a little bit of it and think, oh yeah, it's kind of like this kind of wussy kind of like indie rock. I'm not really into that, but for some reason it just kind of like seeps in. And also the lyrics, also, you know, if you kind of zone in on the lyrics a bit, I found that they really kind of drew me in, and and sort of add to the kind of atmosphere of the tracks. And the whole album's got a great atmosphere, and love the guitar, love the sounds of all the instruments working together. And this is a cool track. Track two, Past Lives by Real Estate.
That's Will's band of the week favorite, Real Estate. Yeah, it's one of those bands that's like almost unanimous among all of us. We just all love Real Estate. Something about them. And this album is so consistent, right? It just, there's really not a weakness where you're like kind of waiting for that track to end and the next one to start. You're just, the whole thing through is just really solid.
Yeah. Yeah. It's got a kind of dreamy vibe that I really liked. Really easy to listen to.
Yep. Would you say, remember when we were talking a couple months ago and there was a band and you made a comparison to The Church?
Yeah.
Don't you think that the guitar work of Real Estate is kind of like The Church a little bit?
It's
the two guitars going at once that are kind of, it's like an interplay between the two, and the whole thing creates kind of a, like a vibe. I kind of think of it that way.
Yeah. That kind of reverb-y kind of picked notes kind of thing. Yeah.
I would bet that one or more of the members of Real Estate had listened to The Church. That's my bet. But we'll probably never get the answer. Unless we get them as a guest on the podcast, we can ask them. But since we've never had a band as a guest, I can't believe they're not clamoring to be on, but they haven't yet. So you never know. I mean, Real Estate would be the one we'd want to get. Yeah. Yep. In fact, we got invited to a music festival where Real Estate was playing. By the promoter in California. But of course, we didn't have the budget to go there. So that was a low budget podcast. See, he didn't offer all expenses paid. He just said, come on out to my music festival. Real Estate is playing. And they're playing at a winery. So the person who offered us that I can't remember your name, but that was awesome. It was super cool. And we looked at each other and said, damn, I wish we could actually do that. Okay, we are we're getting down to the really serious picks here. Number three.
Number three is Lee Rinaldo and the Dust. So Lee Rinaldo, I love him because he's from Sonic Youth, who no one's saying that they've officially broken up, but I think they've pretty much they call it being on hiatus or whatever, but basically yeah. Thurston Moore and Kim Gordon have divorced each other, so I don't really think there's going to be any more Sonic Youth albums in the next little while.
That'd be hard, right?
He's actually been very prolific. He's done sort of two awesome solo albums in about the last 3 years, but he's also been putting out sort of albums of, you know, demos. And now he's put out a an album called Acoustic Dust. And in the liner notes, he was talking about how he and his band were on tour. I think they were going to a music festival in Spain. But then the gig got cancelled, so they had a sort of spare few days, and the promoter booked them some studio time in Morocco, I believe. So they went down to record some acoustic versions of songs from these two albums. And that kind of sounds kind of crappy, you know. It's like those kind of like unplugged albums from the 90s, you know. They're always kind of like pretty crappy versions of their songs. But I actually thought this was really, really nicely done, and just kind of a good selection of the best songs from his last two solo albums. And, you know, also I thought Lee Ranaldo's voice, I reckon, is just getting better and better. He's got great musos in the band. Obviously, Steve Shelley is the drummer from Sonic Youth, plays in his band. But some other great players. So, yeah, this is just a cool album. I love Lee Ranaldo and just love the stuff that he's doing, even since Sonic Youth. So, yeah, from the album Acoustic Dust, I pronounce this track title as Home Chords.
Lee Ranaldo and the Dust. That definitely is more than just your basic acoustic track, right? There's a lot going on in there.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Some cool electric guitar and, yeah, they're just kind of different versions, I suppose, different versions of these songs.
So what did you think of the whole Sonic Youth career trajectory? I thought of them kind of like one of my old favorite bands, the Cocteau Twins. They were already really well established, like several years into their career, and then they came up with a string of albums that were really great after they already had a whole bunch of albums, which is really kind of cool because their sound kind of changed. And I don't know how you feel about this, but I thought some of those Sonic Youth albums, like through the 2000s, were some of their best.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I tend to get onto bands like 10 years after everyone else gets onto them. So I remember like in the early 90s, like when the song like 100%
right
from the
yep.
Dirty album, I think, was a bit of a hit. It was like, oh yeah, this is cool, you know, pretty rockin'. And that was kind of when, you know, grunge started being big. But obviously before then, you know, they had, you know, albums like Daydream Nation and stuff like that. But I was never really into them, and it wasn't until the very late 90s that I really started getting into tracks like The Diamond Sea from the Washing Machine album and stuff like that. But even later than that, really was their last maybe three or four albums from about Murray Street and Sonic Nurse and Rather Ripped, which those three albums, which were almost their last albums, I just thought were great. And I really think that when people have been playing for a long time, you know, when they're older in age, you know, there's a certain, you know, I guess maturity in their sound, but it's like, you know, they've just been doing it for a long time and you know, Sonic Youth as a band, I mean, I think they only changed their drummer and that was, you know, after the first album or something like that. So it's basically the same four members just touring the world and making albums for decades. So when they became a little bit older, their music to me kind of slowed down a bit and it did become a little less kind of harsh in its sound, just smoothed out a tiny little bit. I just thought, man, this is just such great music. And I suppose the other thing that I liked about Sonic Youth is that I never really felt like they've got a sort of a standard song structure. You know, there's not a kind of a standard Sonic Youth like song. They've kind of got a sound, but they're not, you know, so many of their songs are completely wide open in the way that they're constructed. I just think they're just so creative and I just still love listening to their music so much.
Yeah, they don't just go verse, chorus, and there's not a Chuck Berry guitar solo in the middle. Yep.
Although it would be amazing if there was, but yeah, that's right. And you know that, you know, different members all sing and they obviously all kind of write and they swap, you know, swap instrument, you know, sometimes I think Kim, the bass player, was playing guitar and, you know, so they're just, yeah, a great kind of combination of musical personalities, I think.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, you've talked about how, you know, with all the experience and how well they've sort of, how good they've remained throughout the years, that's not really that common, you know. A lot of, I think a bigger majority of bands, they just kind of burn out in their 20s and then they run out of ideas and then their albums seem kind of forced and then everybody kind of just forgets about them and they're just gone, right? So there's something to be said for being a, you know, a good aging rocker, which of course we'd like to promote on the podcast. So speaking of aging rockers, who you got at number two?
Yeah, Jay Maskus from, obviously from Dinosaur Jr. And this is his second sort of proper acoustic album that he released this year, Tied to a Star. I remember reading a couple of reviews that were saying, oh, yeah, it's good, but maybe it's not as good as the previous album. I don't know. I did listen to this a lot. I mean, I find with Jay Maskus, I find him quite an interesting person because he's sort of, you know, you see pictures of him and he's kind of got this long grey hair and this kind of grey scraggly beard and he's becoming rounder as we all do as we get older and he sort of wears these purple Adidas tracksuits and, you know, these sort of baseball caps. He's sort of obviously a bit of an eccentric kind of guy. But then when I listen to his songs and I listen to kind of what he's saying with the lyrics in his songs, he seems like such a different person in, you know, who's writing these songs because they're such beautiful songs. And I really feel like he's really trying to sort of say something about life and about how he sees life through his songs. And so I really try to connect with that person. And then when I see pictures of him, I just think, wow, it seems like such a different kind of character. And the intriguing nature of Jay Maskus. Anyway, I'll stop talking. Let's hear this beautiful track, which is the final track from his album, Tied to a Star. This is the song called Better Plane. To see me, but I lost out.
Jay Maskus, number two from the Melbourne Bureau of the Wills Band of the Week podcast. Yes.
That's true, and he's actually coming out to Australia. I'll be seeing him in February, so maybe I can give you a live report.
Great.
On what he's like live.
Good.
I'm really looking forward to it, actually. I've been hanging out to see. I've never seen him live, and Dinosaur Jr. have certainly been out here a number of times, and Jay Maskus has been out, and always kind of miss him or don't get around to buying tickets, but this time it's like, yep, got to go. So it's coming up really soon.
Great. Good to have some live shows to look forward to.
Yeah, yeah. And look, that song was called Better Plane, and I think he was talking about a different sort of plane than an aeroplane, but I was thinking that when you were talking about being asked to go to the real estate show on the other side of the country, I mean, what I'm really waiting for is a photo of you and Chris and Barrett standing on the tarmac with like this, like a white sort of jet behind you with Will's Band of the Week painted on the side, you know, a bit like, right, Led Zeppelin or, you know, Bon Jovi or something like that, because they've all got their own jets,
right,
with their name, yep, name of the band on the side.
Yeah.
You guys are just, that's all you got to do. That's all you got to do is just get a jet with your name printed on the side, and then you can just fly to whatever real estate gig in any country of the world. Yeah. Let's just try to make it happen.
Maybe if we just assume that role, everything else will just fall into place. We just have to act like we belong there, and then you know, people will follow suit. Might have to give that a try. All right, well, I think we're up to that time now, and we are going to continue a little bit of a theme, aren't we, with your number one choice for 2014.
Yes, and it's Thurston Moore, so the other guitar player from Sonic Youth. And look, you know, I know that I sort of talked about this album on your podcast a couple of months ago, and I did sort of say, yeah, it's probably my album of the year. And I think it probably is, just in terms of albums that I always wanted to listen to, something I was always in the mood for, just loved it a lot. So, yeah, the Thurston Moore album, The Best Day. Had some other great players in the band, you know, Steve Shelley, again, the drummer from Sonic Youth, bass player from My Bloody Valentine, and a guitar player from, you know, some other band no one's ever heard of, but I put them all together, I thought it sounded good. So, yeah, really good album of songs. You know, it's kind of funny, you know, I mean, basically, you know, this could almost be a Sonic Youth album, and that's probably why I like it, really, but I don't care because I really liked it. So let's have a listen to a track. This is track two, Forevermore. There you go. You know, it's and as I was sort of saying at the top of the show, you know, it's kind of stupid to kind of think, oh, that's my the number one song of the year. But it's you know, it's just just think of it as a compilation tape that we've made together. Will sending it out to all our friends listening, and that was the last song on the compilation tape. You know, all good music. You know, just there to be enjoyed.
Definitely, absolutely. Thurston Moore, he is the, if he's not, he should be the major spokesperson for the Fender Jazzmaster guitar, right? And you can tell in his sound when he's hitting those strings behind the bridge and making that kind of cool sound that kind of works better on a Jazzmaster than other guitars. For all you guitar geeks out there. I only know that because my son plays a Jazzmaster, so I kind of know these little things about it, even though I'm just a basic bass guy. But you've got guitars too, don't you, Nicholas?
I do have guitars. I got two more guitars than I need, but I love guitars and love talking about guitars. And yeah, I love listening to people's guitars and thinking, oh yeah, yeah, Thurston Moore plays a Jazzmaster. He gives you that jingle jangle like no other jingly jangly guitar. And
right.
It's all so much fun. Jay Maskus plays a Jazzmaster as well. Actually, both of those guys have got their own signature series, Fender Jazzmasters. So if you want a Jazzmaster Jay Maskus, you can get one. If you want a Jazzmaster Thurston Moore model, even a Lee Rinaldo. So the top three, there you go. Top three in my top 10, they've all got their own signature Fender Jazzmaster models.
Yep.
In
and
your local guitar shop.
Grant's favorite guitar that he plays like all the time is a Jay Maskus Jazzmaster.
Oh, cool.
Yep.
See, I love that.
Yep, and he keeps buying and selling other guitars and they never measure up to that one. So it's kind of cool because then it's like your own guitar. It gets older and older, more and more beaten up, you know, and you just like it even more as the years go by. So it's kind of cool that way. Yeah, so, you know, this podcast is going to go up in early 2015, but I think we can still say, you know, goodbye to 2014 slightly in the rearview mirror, right? And this is where we're, as a podcast, we're wrapping up all the 2014 specials. We've never had so many 2014 specials, but, you know, in the past, we didn't have the Bureau Chiefs, so you guys really kept us going through, you know, we would have just been like, you know, trying to scrape for music to talk about that people weren't inspired by and stuff, and yeah, it'd be no fun. So,
it's great. Just been just so much fun, and really, you know, just a privilege, really. So, thank you again, Will. You know, it's just lovely to be invited to be part of your podcast. I certainly don't take it for granted. And it's lovely to be welcomed so much to your, they're not really airwaves, but let's just call them airwaves. It's lovely to be welcomed to the Will's Band of the Week airwaves. And, you know, hope that the music and the thoughts that I've shared have been, you know, somehow I don't even know what I'm trying to say now, you know, in the kind of vibe of what you guys do.
Yes, absolutely. Very cool.
Yeah.
Yep.
No, it's great. So, look, thanks so much. And thanks so much for, you know, pushing the buttons so expertly, because I'm just, you know, sitting here in the car in Perth, Australia. We've got no eye contact. I can't sort of give you a wink or a nod of the head of when to push that button to hit the track, and you know,
right,
you're just right on the money. So thanks for your work.
I'm ready at the controls. I'm trying to make the talent sound good. Yep. All right. Well, thanks again. And we'll definitely be in touch. And, you know, we'll try to do more Bureau Chief reports during 2015. This is an upgrade.
That is just totally awesome.
It's been a total upgrade to the podcast, I think. So, all right. I guess that's all. We'll say goodbye to 2014. And we'll
And let's just wish everyone a great 2015. Let's just make it even better than 2014.
Let's do that. I think we should. Yep. All right. Thanks. We'll talk to everybody again next week with another edition of Will's Band of the Week. Good night.
Good night.
You can subscribe to the Will's Band of the Week podcast using iTunes or any other podcast app. All of our podcasts are also available directly on our webpage, willsband.net. You can contact us directly by email to willsband@yahoo.com, on our Facebook page, or on Twitter at Will's Band. The Will's Band of the Week podcast is brought to you every week from Fourth Bedroom Studios in Madison, Wisconsin. Our theme music was composed by Grant and performed by Grant and Will. Thanks for listening.